This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress. For a reason. Visit kinsta.com/BF. That's KINSTA.com/BF. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Tommy, does buying a new car have to always suck?
Yeah, I think it does.
Does it have to be like a six-hour process?
Yes, it does. Yep, I'm pretty sure it does.
Does it have to be like, you know, you're going to your grade school gym class and you're all nervous and stressed about the fact that you got to get changed into different underwear and all the kids are making fun of you? Does it have to be such a horrible, stressful situation, something that you do only, you know, once or twice every few years, and it just becomes untenable?
Yes. Genuinely, I think that buying a new car, pretty much almost without fail, is always a terrible experience.
All right, so in this video / podcast, we're going to be talking about the 30 or so cars that we have bought and sold in the last year. And we're going to be telling you stories about, you know, what was a good process, what was a bad process, what was a sketchy process, because there was that. And some tips, basically, on how you can buy both new and used cars that make it suck less.
Yeah, and this is going to be an interesting one for me too, Dad, because, you know, with used cars, we have, you know, found kind of a groove and a rhythm, and it's easy. But with new cars, including ones that, you know, I have purchased recently, last year, with the Fiat 500, it was such a unbelievably negative experience where I'm kind of like, I'm almost over the new car thing because the dealership experience is typically so bad.
All right, so hold on to that thought because we'll get to it. Let's go kind of chronologically in time with the cars that we bought and sold. So yesterday, I just sold our 2014 Tesla Model S. And that process was, buying it was great, selling it was horrendous until I actually found the right buyer. So let's start with buying it. So I found that car on Craigslist. And a lot of people now don't use Craigslist. They use Facebook Marketplace. But Craigslist is actually, I find, a much more, much less scary, much less sketchy place to actually sell vehicles, because with Facebook Marketplace, it's become such a jungle and such a, because you have to use Messenger and people ghost you. There's just, you know, there's all those like videos of people making fun of Facebook Marketplace, and unfortunately a lot of it is based on truth. So let me tell you what happened when I tried to sell the car. Actually, let me tell you when I first bought it. So we bought this 2014 Tesla Model S because what did we want to do? Why were we buying one with 100,000 miles?
I mean, I think the point of the series is we wanted to see what it would be like to live with an old electric car that has a reputation for being terrible to own, right? With high ownership costs and reliability problems.
Well, we wanted to see what the battery was like after 100,000 miles.
Yeah, it turned out actually really good. The car, well, it didn't turn out to be really good. The battery turned out to be perfect, but in the short time we owned it, I think it was probably 7 months, right? We had a lot of issues with things related to the battery. So the air conditioning and heat system went out, right? We had just silly little niggly problems like with the power seat failing and moving on its own. So there was like a bunch of little weird stupid stuff that broke on the car, but the high voltage system, the battery, the powertrain was fine.
Yeah, we also had the replaced battery in it. We had the replaced drive unit. So somebody had replaced under warranty the motor. And the great news about it was the battery still had 91% of its original capacity, even after 100,000 miles in 10 years. So the buying part was actually nice. I found it on Craigslist, and it was a surprise, and it made me feel good, believe it or not, because the car had belonged to one owner up in Fort Collins, and what had happened was the gentleman unfortunately passed away from cancer. And his friend was selling the car for him to give the money to his widow. And so he knew nothing about the car. There was no history. He just knew that his friend had died, that he needed to sell this thing to give it to give the money to his widow. And so I test drove it. I actually usually I like to talk to people. That's one of my tricks. If I'm buying something, I won't actually meet somebody or even consider buying it if I can't talk to the person beforehand. A lot of people just do all this by text, but I want to make sure that this person's not an axe murderer. I want to make sure that they're serious. And I don't want to, I have a series of questions that I ask when I'm buying a car on Craigslist, even or Facebook Marketplace. And most of those have to do with kind of trying to whittle down the fact that this car is, you know, something that I want to buy. So let's start with those questions that I ask. First and foremost, I want to know the history of the car. And in this case, the guy had no idea, so that was kind of a crapshoot. Then I want to know if it has had any accidents, because that affects how easily you can sell it. In other words, either give me the Carfax, or if you've had an accident, the next question I ask is there any rust? Usually in Colorado, this isn't an issue, but rust is very expensive to fix. Body work is much more expensive than anything else. So if there's any rust, I walk away from it. Does everything work, especially in a used car? That's an important question. And then perhaps the most important question I always like to ask is, why are you selling it? And that kind of goes to the character of the car and to the seller. And the trick that I have learned, I think you have learned, is when you're buying a car from somebody, you're buying the seller as much as you're buying the car. Would you agree?
Yeah.
If the guy or gal seems straightforward, seems nice, seems, you know, the kind of person that you'd like to hang out with, then it's the kind of person I want to buy a car from. If that person feels like I've got something and this is very valuable and you're going to have to pay through the nose, I have no interest whatsoever in buying it. And so this guy was very nice. Like I said, he was very honest. He knew nothing about the car. We actually met at a coffee shop. I was like, hey, can I take it for a test drive? He's like, yeah, take it for a test drive. Took it for a test drive. The car had had no accidents. Everything worked. It had over 100,000 miles. The surprise, and this is why it was so nice, was when I bought the car. And by the way, I bought it for $13,800. I'll tell you how much I sold it for in a typical TFL fashion. So when I bought the car, I took it to the supercharger, and surprise, surprise, it had free supercharging. It was one of those cars that had free supercharging for life, which increased the value, right? Because somebody's going to want that car just because they'll never have to pay for fuel. But there's a caveat. What's the caveat with a free supercharging for life on a 10-year-old Tesla?
It just charges slower.
Yeah. So Tesla, in their wisdom, has turned down the charging ability to preserve, I'm doing air quotes here, the battery. But that means that you spend a lot more time at a supercharger.
All right, so let's keep going. So how does this have to relate with buying a new car?
Well, no, we're going to get to that. We're talking about used cars.
Okay.
Now. Okay? So get on board with this. We're just having a conversation. I have no, like, agenda here.
Okay.
All right. So we bought it. We did the videos. Oh, it also had premium connectivity, which is cool.
Yeah.
So then I go to sell it. So I put it back on Craigslist, and that's when the trouble began. I put it on Facebook, and I had this guy who contacted me, and I was asking, I think initially 14 or 13.9 for it because I bought it for 13.8, and he came back and he's like, "Hey, I'll give you 8 for it," which is insulting.
Well, but I think that you kind of just expect that. You know, when I've sold cars on Facebook, that's just how it goes, right? You list a car for 3, you get offers for $800. Right,
but he wasn't the only one. I think I probably had a half a dozen people.
And that's just how it goes on Facebook.
Who said, "I've got cash. I'll come in, 50% under the market."
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, just stop wasting your time. Stop wasting my time. You know, if you're a serious seller, you kind of know what the car is worth. You can check it out on KBB. There's a lot of places. You can look on Facebook and see what other people are selling it for. It's pretty much a set standard. It's not hard to figure out. And if you're trying to lowball people, it's just insulting.
Yeah, but that's Facebook. I mean, you can claim to want to change it, but just the lowball culture, it's almost kind of funny to me.
Okay.
You just say no thanks and then you move on. Right. It's just kind of how it goes. When I've sold cars on Facebook, it's always been that same thing.
Well, first of all, I hate using Messenger. So I started texting to this guy and I'm like, no. And I'm trying to explain to him why I think it's worth what it is.
That's where you went wrong.
And what happened was like a 14-hour text conversation.
Never try to explain. If the offer is so low, just move on. It's not worth trying to explain because you're never going to convince
him. But he kept coming up.
Yeah, well, sure. He's going to try to convince you.
I kept saying no and he kept coming up and up and up. And then the kicker of this thing was, which made me understand that he didn't understand anything about electric cars. He's like, "Well, I'll give you like 12 for it." And I'm like, "No, it's worth more than that. It's got full self-charging for life, yada, yada, yada." And then he came back and showed me a comparable. So he said, well, why do you want 14 when I can buy the same car for 12? And the car that he sent me was a 60. So he had no clue between the difference between an electric car. This is the size of the battery, right? It's a 60 kilowatt hour battery versus an 85 kilowatt hour battery. And electric cars, the value there is all about battery, battery, battery. Or it's like real estate is location, location, location. Electric cars are battery, battery, battery. And a car that has a range, effective range, with warm weather of 150 miles versus 250 miles, which is the car I was selling, of course is going to sell for a lot less, because basically what you're buying with a 60, a Tesla Model S60, is a grocery getter.
Yeah.
And in the winter, it's going to be like 120 miles.
Yeah, I mean, I think like this is – look, I appreciate you trying to go back and forth with this guy. But if they come in so low and even if they start going up a little bit, I just don't waste my time.
Yeah, fair. Right?
Just move on to the next person.
Anyway, finally after like, you know, lowering the price – and I learned something else, which is kind of – I think might be interesting. So when we were buying our Discovery 5, there's a dealership in Denver and they don't haggle – I didn't know this, on used car prices. So if they have a used vehicle, and this was a Range Rover, Land Rover dealership, and they have a price for the used vehicle, let's say it's $50,000. Ours wasn't 50, ours was 20, but let's say it's 50. So you call them up and you'll say, I'll give you 48. And they'll be like, no, it's 50. And you'll be like, I'll give you 48. No, it's 50. But what they do, and I'm seeing this both in terms of used car dealers, and Tesla does this as well, and they basically keep lowering the price, and Tesla does it day by day on a lot of their used vehicles. So what they'll do is they'll have vehicles that they have in stock, not new vehicles, used vehicles that are in stock that are at the Tesla store, and every day they'll lower it by like $400. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, a common thing that's happening in the industry now. And this was what was happening with this Land Rover Discovery. It started like a 22,000 or 24. My price for it was like 21. And I just waited. I guess I outweighed anybody else because nobody else wanted it. I waited for it to go down to 21. And then when it went down, because I noticed that it was coming down, I think with them it was every week. With Tesla, it's every day they bring it down like $400 on their used vehicles, especially like the expensive ones. I'm sure that number changes based on what you're buying. I'm sure it's like if you're buying a, you know, a 3-year-old Model 3, they're probably going to go down $200. I don't know. But anyway, I waited, and when it got to 21, I said, I'll buy it, and I bought it for 21. That was kind of cool.
Okay.
Don't you think? It's kind of an insider tip there that you could play the game. I mean, of course, somebody else can come and buy before you, but if you know that like every week or every day they're going to lower it a certain amount, you can just sit there and wait for it to come to you.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look.
Did you know this?
I did know this.
You did not know
this. I did know this, yeah. I mean, my rule of thumb, never buy a car from a dealership, okay, if you can avoid it.
I look for everywhere. I wanted a specific car. With the Disco, I wanted that copper color,
right,
which was the Hero color, which is the color that the car was introduced in. And there aren't a lot of them around. And I wanted the diesel, which is also hard to get. So sometimes if you want something very specific, you got to go. Like when I go on Craigslist, the first thing I'll do is get rid of all the dealers.
Yeah.
But if you want something specific, sometimes you have to go to a dealer.
I mean, I don't mean to sound like a grumpy old man, which I do. I know, very much sound like a grumpy old man. There are – this is, I think, a good transition. It's to the point now where I'm – you know, we've been doing this long enough and we've bought and sold enough cars where I'm so tired and frustrated of the dealer experience that I will only work with dealers that I know have been good with. So, for example, Johnson's Auto Plaza, right, that we've bought a bunch of Rams and Chevys for. And I know you're the same way, Mr. Get a Good Dealer, right? You really like working with Johnson's, with Brighton Ford, with our friends at Volkswagen out in Pennsylvania, right?
Reading, yeah, Volkswagen of Reading.
Yeah, but it's Audi to the point where, like, I feel like every time I go into a dealership, I'm just, like, I'm bait trying to get screwed over, right?
Yeah, so...
I'll give you an example. Like, when I leased my free Fiat... I knew they weren't going to screw me over because it was free, but it was such a painful experience. Like, I just couldn't take 8 hours of sitting there while they're messing around with stuff, you know, and then 3 trips back to try to sort out the paperwork and stuff. Like, it's so draining to my soul knowing how easy it could be to purchase or lease a car and the way that they don't make it that way that I can't handle it.
So I'm going to say something, and it's something that I've become used to, and when I don't do it this way, it makes me really upset, and it goes to exactly what you said. With Brighton or with Johnson's or with, Reading, people that you know, good dealerships, I can literally walk into the dealership and I can buy a car in 2 minutes. And when I say 2 minutes, I'm not exaggerating. I mean 2 minutes. I don't have to go through any of the bullshit. I've picked out the car. We've agreed upon the price. I go right into the finance manager's office. They have the paperwork waiting for me. I sign it, and there's probably like 20 or 30 signatures. That takes the longest. I sign the check. I hand it over to them. They give me the keys, and I'm out of there. 2 minutes. And, you know, it doesn't have to be the six-hour process. The problem is if you don't know the new car dealership, it can be a six-hour process because they make it that way. But it doesn't have to be that way. Now, there's a couple caveats here. First, we're paying cash.
Sure.
So we're not doing a lease. We're not financing.
Well, I did lease with the Fiat, right, which is part of the reason it took so long.
So they're not running a credit check on you. which helps. When we leased that Leaf for $9 a month, that was also a painful process. In fact, I walked out of the dealership and I gave up and I came back that afternoon. Luckily, they were 5 minutes from our office because it was taking so long just to do this lease. You know, I hate the thing where you walk in and they're like, well, the finance manager was somebody else, so it's going to take you another hour while they're doing the paperwork for somebody else.
Yeah.
And the dealers I work with know that we won't tolerate that. And they know that we bring a big audience. And the problem there is the reason they're doing that is because they know that we're providing a lot of publicity, and most people don't have that.
I mean, I think the reason that I'm not that involved in this podcast, I'm sorry if I look like I'm too
down. Yeah, you seem like you're bored already.
Because, yes, I'm so dejected by the whole car buying process.
But that's what we're trying to help people
out
here. But
I just don't think that there is a way to help people out.
Oh, yeah, there is a way to help people out.
For example, like the number of times we go into a dealership trying to buy a vehicle, and then things go badly, and we have to flash the fact that we have a million subscribers is insane. And like normal people can't do that. And I'm so dejected by the process. Like I just want nothing to do with it. I really am so bummed out about it.
All right. So I'll give you an example. Like, you know, I've bought a lot of cars for the channel in a lot of different states in a lot of different ways. So I'll give you some tips right now that you can use to figure out which dealerships are good and which dealerships aren't good.
Okay.
These are hard-earned lessons that I've learned. Sometimes I've broken my own rules. I'll tell you a story about that as well. But let's talk about, like, lessons that you learned. First of all, when you go to the dealer's website and you look at the website, they all have obviously an inventory of vehicles.
This Black Friday, get 6 months free when you move your WordPress sites to Kinsta. Enjoy faster load times, no stress when traffic spikes, and hosting you can actually count on. We're G2's number one rated host for WordPress for a reason. Visit kinsta.com/bf. That's kinsta.com/bf. Don't miss out. Offer ends December 2nd.
Now, if it's Toyota, because Toyota works with regional offices, chances are that what's on the inventory of vehicles on the Toyota dealerships isn't what they have at the dealership, which is also very frustrating because they're getting their vehicles not from corporate, they're getting them from a regional kind of middleman. And the regional middleman controls what's on the website. So with the Toyota world, it's very difficult to figure out actually what's in stock and what's coming and what's been sold. Very hard. And so with Toyota, you got to make a phone call and you got to call the dealership and you got to find out if that vehicle is actually there. But all the other manufacturers, usually they do a pretty good job of kind of putting their current inventory. Usually,
I haven't found that at all.
Let me finish. Okay. Usually of what they have a current inventory. And if they're a good dealer, they'll show you what's on the dealership ground on the lot and they'll show you what's coming. And if you don't have that differential, and if they put vehicles that are coming as if they have them, walk away. That's my first.
I'm going to be honest, Ed. That's pretty much every dealer I've seen. Every dealer will have what's coming.
Well, like a Johnson's, you can tell what they have because they have a place where they take pictures, and you can see that they've actually taken pictures of that actual vehicle, and it's in their little like showroom location, so you know they have it.
And I know like a lot of dealers use the same system, but why even show the in-transit cars?
Well, I'm saying, okay, so that's number one. If they mark an in-transit car as being there, don't even go. Mm-hmm. The second clue, if I ever see on the inventory call for pricing, walk away. If you can't tell me the price on your publicly facing website, I am not interested in buying it because that immediately tells me that this dealer is going to play dealer games. Mm-hmm. Next one, if you click on the vehicle and sometimes you have to call, but if they don't show the Monroney, because oftentimes they won't show the Monroney, they'll just give you a price. But the good dealers will show you the Monroney, and they will also, if it's used car, give you a link to either a Carfax or the other one, which is, what's the other one? There's two of these things. The one that I walk away from is where they have the link to the, it's the other one. It's not the Carfax. It's the Auto Check, I think it's called, and you click on the Auto Check, and it takes you to a page where you have to buy the Auto Check. Mm. Then I also walk away immediately because if this dealership, you know, can't do enough, and this is oftentimes with the used dealership, if they can't spend the $14 that they're charged to actually provide you with a history of the report, and they make you do it while you're buying that car, forget it. That just means that those guys are such tight ass wads that they won't even provide you with the history of the report that they're making you do it, I'm not interested in actually working with these people. So if there's a link to a Carfax, great. If there's a link to an auto e-check, which is what, usually the one that it is, and then you got to pay for it, forget it, guys. Come on. If you're selling a car and you can't provide the history of the thing, don't even look at me because I'm not interested in working with you. These are all red flags that you can easily find out.
But now, the problem is...
Well, let me finish.
Hang on. Mm-hmm. Every dealer, and apart from the ones we listed that I've worked with, will have at least one of these red flags. I've never seen a dealer that has none of these red flags.
But you're not the one buying the cars for the company. I'm the one.
Yeah, but
buying
I'm the
cars.
One because I hate buying cars.
Yes, I know. So you're not exactly objective. You're already walking into this.
I am because, Dad, I've seen and I've heard. This whole topic just frustrates me so much because, like, I know that there are hacks to it, but my heart goes out to the viewers that reached out that are just like getting so.
Well, I'm trying to
so
help.
Frustrated.
So let's help them.
I just don't know if there is a lot of help to be had.
I'm just giving you three great tips.
I know, but...
I'm going to give you more. Here's another one.
Buy a used car from a private party.
There's also problems with it. Yeah,
that's my solution.
Yeah, there's all kinds of problems with that as well. Here's another one. What I would suggest you do is expand your search outside of your geographic area.
Sure. Yeah.
So one out of four trucks are sold in Texas. We have found that if you want to buy a truck... Because there's a lot more trucks for sale in Texas, competition tends to be greater. So be ready to get on an airplane and fly to buy a car out of state. And then you've got the pleasure, the fun of actually road tripping it back home. We do this a lot. The last time, of course, we did it, it blew up in our faces when we bought that ZR1 C4 Corvette. And we can talk about that in a second. But in general, be prepared to travel. Don't just think, well, I want to go to my local Honda dealer or my local GM dealer. You know, be prepared to go to someplace out of state and make it into a fun weekend or a fun weekday for you and your buddies or your family ones.
Good advice, yeah.
Make it fun. And for me, the experience oftentimes is more important than the vehicle.
But so. I would say 75% of the times that we have registered a vehicle or bought a vehicle out of state, they mess up our taxes.
This is a problem.
This has happened probably three of the four times
we've
done it in the last 2 years.
Especially in California.
And I'll note, you're not the one dealing with when they mess up the taxes.
No, exactly.
Zach is. And that takes a lot of work on his part. It's a lot of work going back and forth to the DMV.
Well,
and
it's like I said, especially in California. So when it's ever it's happened, it's been in California.
It's happened with the Ram, too, in Idaho. That was a mess up, too.
I don't remember the Ram. I remember it happening pretty much every time in California because California has this law where you have to pay the taxes in the state of California.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you have to go recover them from your local, and that's hard.
Yeah. So
if they screw it out, basically you're paying taxes at the California rate, and then you got to get the money back. And once you give them, there's a Ferengi rule of acquisition, which is a Star Trek thing. And the rule is once you get their money, never give it back. And that's how I kind of feel about California taxes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So, be careful of that. If you're buying a used car out of state, then in Colorado, these rules vary, but you have to do a VIN inspection.
Yeah, and an emissions test. That's a big problem, too.
So then the other thing that, you know, I look for is if I'm interested in a car, especially a new car, and it's at a new car dealership, I like to talk, once again, to the salesman. And if he feels or comes across as salesman-y, if I ask a question about the vehicle and they immediately don't know the answer, or if they don't know if the vehicle's even in stock, I just walk away from it. Because if you don't know what you have in stock, if you don't have a system in place at the dealership that you can't easily look up on a computer to know what's in stock, I mean, oftentimes you'll get something like, I don't know if the car's still here. Another one is bait and switch that's very common. So if you ever actually find a vehicle, and this happened to us when I was looking for Stubby, the truck, where the vehicle was on the website and I would call him up and then I would get the salesman and the first thing he would say is, oh, I just sold that yesterday or we just sold that 5 hours ago. That's a bunch of BS. What they're doing is bait and switch.
Yeah.
Right? They're putting vehicles that they have no intention of selling because they know they're popular. And so they'll be like, oh, we don't have that one, but this one for $10,000 more is sitting right next to me. So anytime you have one of those kind of used car salesman trips, just walk away from it. And this is work, Tommy. This is not easy. This is work. But if you want the experience to be easy, you have to put in the work.
Well,
and I know that's stupid. That's why I only buy cars from the certain dealers that we deal with because I don't have to work.
Yeah,
I can just go and buy it.
Exactly. But don't you think that's like a fundamental problem with the system?
Yeah, but what? How am I going to? I wish there were a different system. Okay, you want a different system? You can go buy a Tesla in your underwear at 2 a.m.
Yes, and that's a really good system. Like genuinely, I do have one positive thing to say today.
Okay, yeah.
Pay attention, everybody. The only interesting thing I have to say today. Buying the Tesla where it's direct from the manufacturer and you can do it all online.
Yeah.
that should be the way every car transaction happens. I genuinely mean it.
All right, but I had a pretty ugly. I was trying to buy a Plaid recently, which I didn't buy because I got on a Plaid. I love a bargain. I'm a sucker for a bargain. And Plaids were like 153 years ago, and a lot of people leased them. And now you can buy a Tesla Model S Plaid that's 3 years old for $50,000. It's depreciated basically 2/3 of the value. Mm-hmm. So I found a blue one that I liked. That had like 36,000 miles. It was 3 years old, and it was. And I'm using air quotes here. At the Tesla store, and I'm not saying dealership because it's not a dealership, at the Tesla store in the Springs. Mm. So the way that you get it is you go online and then you say, I'm interested in this. And if you want to buy it, then you have to put down a $500 deposit. Mm. And I wanted to know if that deposit was refundable or not. Because once you put that deposit down, they will bring the car up from the Springs for free to... In this case, Denver. It's not far. You can also do the same thing, like buy one in Chicago and they'll bring it to Chicago, but then they add like a $2,000 destination fee on top of it. So you can buy one from the store in Chicago that they have sitting there. This is what I thought. I'll bring it to Colorado, but then it takes a week and you got to pay for it. But the one, because Springs and Denver are so close, they'll just bring it up. So, but I want to know if when that Tesla shows up here in Denver and I go look at it and the thing smells like somebody's been smoking in it for the last 3 years. I don't want it.
Yeah.
Do they refund the money? So I filled out the little form, let me know before and the guy calls me back on the phone. So they have people who actually call you. And I'm like, well, what happens if, this car is something that I don't want? And he said, well, you lose out on that $500.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I'm not going to buy a car, a $50,000 car without ever even seeing it.
Sure.
I think, I can do that for a new car. That's fine, right? If I'm buying a brand new, there's a warranty, it's fine. But I don't know.
No, that system's broken too.
Yeah, I don't know. So I'm like, okay, I'm not interested in this because, like I say, if this thing comes up and it's a bummer of a car, then I'm stuck losing $500. It's not worth it. So then somebody calls me back, and like his boss is a very nice lady calls me back, and she said, hey, I see you're interested in this blue Tesla. What can I help you with? And I'm like, I don't want to pay $500 and not see it. And she said, well, what you can do, and I've had this happen before, is you can go down to the Springs and you can go to the auction and you could probably get in there and see it. And I'm like, auction?
Yeah.
What do you mean auction? And I think what they were doing is they were, I think Tesla originally sold the car. I think that what had happened was that it came back on a lease and that they put it in the auction and they were using the auction to hold it until it was actually auctioned or until they sold it.
Yeah.
And the only way I could go and actually see it was to go to the auction and hopefully the auction would let me in to go look at the car. And that's also kind of bullshit, Tommy. Sorry, that's also BS. If I want to buy a used car, I don't think it's asking a lot to actually be able to smell the interior before I plop down $50,000.
I mean more buying a new Tesla. I don't think the system works. The system that should be in place, and this is the reason they were so popular, and I also think it's generational, right? My generation, I think your generation's ability to deal and manage with conflict and deal with this process is so much higher than anybody I know.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that compliment.
No, I mean it. I mean, I think that people, myself included, they just don't want to deal with this face-to-face, like, conflict. BS that you said, and just inaccuracies and lying, right? It's just, it's something that sounds terrible. So, I mean, the best solution, which should have worked but didn't because I think the company was pretty mismanaged, is the Carvana Vroom solution, right? Where you go, you see the virtual car, you see the price, the car comes delivered with the title. If you don't like it, you return it, you get your money back, right? That should be the system for everything. It doesn't work, in my opinion, because they didn't deliver titles in time. There was a whole problem with registrations. Then the cars they were delivering were just of poor quality and too expensive. So that kind of fell apart. But that should be the way that buying a used car through a quote dealer works.
You know what happened with us? Well, Vroom, I don't think they're in business anymore, are they?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Yeah,
Carvana
they
still
took our $60,000 and then they wouldn't refund it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they lost it.
So I was going to buy an i8 from Vroom. Like, this is like 5 years ago.
I remember.
And I sent them a certified check. They wanted a wire
cashier's
transfer.
Cashier's check. Yeah, you sent them a cashier's check.
So our accountant doesn't like wire transfers because once the money's gone, it's gone. You can't ever get it back. You can actually stop payment on a certified check, which I did, because why didn't we want the car? What happened? Why
do
we
I walk? Don't remember.
I forget why we walked away from the car. But then they lost the check and they couldn't. So it took them like 2 weeks to find the check before they could send it back to me.
So over on Patreon, if you want to support the chat and my grumpiness, patreon.com/TFLcar. Chris has a good comment on today's podcast. He says, I've not had bad dealership experiences. I'm in my 50s with many new car purchases. Be willing to walk away and go uneducated. I love to negotiate and put the dealer on their toes. See, that's something I hate doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who actually...
I absolutely hate
that. There's a lot
that.
Of people who love that.
Do you like doing that, Cole?
No, but I know Alex really loved it.
Exactly.
Yeah, Alex also, who used to be on our team, yeah. used to. It was like he was like going into the Coliseum.
I know.
And fighting the deer.
The lion.
Like, yeah, like he was a lion. And some people, I get that. Some people love that, you know, back and forth, you know, trying to play one dealer off the other. But, dude, that's a lot of work and that's a lot of conflict.
I mean, part of the problem, so Robert – sounds like he agrees more with me. Worst things in the world, buying pants and trying them on, car dealerships and buying the car and their upcharge BS. My local Honda dealer wanted $14.49 for a package of nitro in the tires and all-weather floor mats, right?
Yeah, by the way, if anybody wants to charge you extra for nitrogen in your tires, walk away. That is just such a money grab. It does absolutely nothing, and God even knows if it's in there. You know, I mean, how do you figure out what percentage? Because it's never 100% nitrogen. It's like a certain percentage of the atmosphere gas. That's way too much information. But never, never buy a car from them. And the other thing that I would never do is when you go in there and they're like, oh, we put a tracker in the car. And I'm like, what, a $25 air tag? Except ours is a professional tracker and it's $600. And I'm like, I don't want a tracker. Sorry, you got to buy it with a tracker. Or I don't want paint protection. Sorry, you got to buy the paint protection. Anytime they force you to buy something, walk away. And you can see all that right on their website because it's usually listed that it's there. And if they surprise you with it, then walk away. Don't do it.
I mean, look, here's the fundamental problem, right? So these are great tips, but let's look at like the used car world.
All right, let's use car
you
world.
You said you're buying the seller when you're buying a used car.
Yes.
How do you buy the seller if it's at a dealership?
Well, I don't. First of all, like the biggest pit of vipers I could ever think of buying a car from would be a used car dealer.
Yeah.
Not a new car dealer that sells used cars. At least they have some like accountability to the manufacturer. I'm talking about those like used car dealers on Colfax in Denver. Those guys terrify me. We bought one car from a used car dealer that actually turned out to be good. That was that old Land Cruiser. Remember, he was cool.
Wasn't that good?
Well, it wasn't that bad. It was just fine. I mean, we paid market value for it, and he actually provided us with a title. And he provided us in Colorado. You have to, if you're a seller, whether private or commercial, you have to provide on a used car the smog certificate.
Mm-hmm.
Most private buyers have no clue about that.
But do you remember how long we were in the dealership for? Like 4 or 5 hours?
I think we were there like 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, there was somebody else buying a car, and then, you know what I mean? Once again, you're sitting there cooling
your
heels.
But the problem with buying a used car from a dealership is you're buying that story, right? You're buying that person, essentially. You're buying their maintenance records. You're buying how much they care for that car. Because that'll make or break a car more than anything. Anything, right? Like we had that experience with my Mini GP that we bought out of Texas. The car was pretty terrible, right? Because we it was COVID, we couldn't go hands-on, and we didn't know the story of the car, and it showed up with all these problems. So I would avoid at all costs buying a used car from a dealership, and I understand like people have to because of financing reasons, but my tip there is like just do your best to save as best you can and then get a cheaper car privately.
All right, so let's talk about that. The average new car price is now sneaked above $50,000, which is mind-blowingly expensive. And so one of the ways that people are circumventing that or are affording new cars, because let's face it, Tommy, people want the reliability, the warranty of a new car. So here's a couple tips that actually I think are very useful. First of all, never do like a 72-month lease. I haven't done the math on this, but if you're buying a car that's $50,000 and you're doing a 72-month loan on it, you're paying probably $90,000 for that car when it's all said and done.
Well, it depends on your interest rate. But
it depends on the interest rate.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. You're going to be. It's just crazy. So in that case, just lease a car. Now, I know the problem with leasing a car is that you don't have the ownership. You don't own it, and you feel like you're just renting a car.
Well, there's more problems than that, actually.
Okay.
There's a lot more problems than that. So I'll give you an example. Like, I got the deal of the century. I'm not complaining about my deal. I love how cheap my Fiat 500 was because it was free.
Yep.
Zero down, $0 a month when that deal was happening, right? Which is incredible. But there are certain costs you can't account for.
Like
you have to have the highest, best quality insurance on you can, right? So like my Land Rover, it's a $5,000 car.
Yeah, you can't just do like...
You can't do liability, right? You can't even do basic. Like Fiat made me say, like, you're going to get the best insurance.
But why would you want to do basic kind of new car? That doesn't make sense, because if you're buying a $50,000 car, you're still going to want to get insured.
It's an unexpected expense that people wouldn't consider. Like, oh, I'm only paying $100 a month for the car. Not true. You may be paying $100 for the car, but you're probably going to spend $250 a month, if you're my age, $300 a month on insurance.
Yeah, but that probably has to do more with like your age and driving record than it does to do
potentially,
with
for sure. But I have a perfect driving record.
I'm just saying, apples to apples, if you buy a $50,000 car, let's say you buy a Honda CR-V, $40,000, to lease that and to buy it, the insurance will be identical. And you're going to want to get the identical shirt, right? You're not going to just have liability on that car because it's too valuable. And the leasing company won't let you just have liability.
But if I was buying a used CR-V, I would get cheaper insurance.
Right. But the problem, and here's the solution, is that people want the peace of mind of having a new car. So, because a lot of people don't want to buy used cars because they feel like they're buying somebody else's problems. That was what your grandfather used to say.
But that was 1978.
Okay. But that mentality is still out there.
And I think it's incorrect. Okay. I think it's largely incorrect. Especially, like, I'm not saying go buy a 1990 Cadillac Elante. I'm saying instead of buying a 2025 Accord.
Like we did for $1,500.
Yeah, well, that's a fun option. Instead of buying a 2025 Accord or leasing a 2025 Accord, go buy a 2015 Accord. It's only 10 years old, right? It's probably going to have under 100,000 miles if it's 10 years old. And it's a Honda. It's going to have pretty good longevity. And you're going to save a lot of money over the purchase price. And you have a lot of money left over if you do have problems.
Well, I would say if you want to get a used car, there's two kind of caveats to that. Once upon a time, this is still out there in the zeitgeist. People still think this. They think that they can save some money by buying a car that's come off lease. Let's say it's 3 years old. So let's say you're looking for a brand new, pick the car, truck of your choice. Instead of buying a brand new, you're going to go and get the three-year-old one because you're basically letting somebody else take the hit on depreciation. Now, that may have been true like 10 years ago, but after COVID and after the parts shortage, oftentimes the three-year-old car either cost as much or just a little bit less than the new car. And at that point, you're better off just to get the new car because you're going to get whatever incentive the manufacturer has. And that's also an important thing we need to talk about.
Hold on there, though. What car? I mean, Jeep Wranglers, I agree, right?
Tacomas. Many, if you go on any
Defender, it's going to be way cheaper 3 years later.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, there's some cars like, obviously, some.
Even like a Bronco Sport, so way cheaper.
The car edge guys know more about this, but I think the average time on a market, time on the lot for any new car is like 75 days. I think I'm right with that. Okay. And so the longer a car is on the lot, in other words, here's the tricky part about buying a new car. You're not buying the car from the manufacturer, you're buying the dealer. And when you think about that, that means that the dealer is really the customer for the manufacturer. And that's why cars are in such boring colors, because dealers won't go out on a limb and pick cool colors. They only order cars that are silver, black, white, gray. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to get really cool colors. And so if the dealer is the customer of the manufacturer, you're buying the car from a small businessman who is sitting, or medium-sized business, I guess, depending on how big the dealership network is, or large. He's sitting on a lot of inventory, which most likely than not, or she is, they've actually taken a loan on. Mm-hmm. So they need to sell those cars. They move them through the system so that they're not paying a lot of interest.
Right.
And if the car sits on the lot for a long time, that means they're spending a lot of money to keep it sitting there. So yeah, so those cars obviously that aren't wanted, that people are afraid of, like I just read that the new Mini isn't selling very well. Those cars, of course, you can probably get a deal on. And that's one way to get a deal on a car. Buy one of the cars that is less sought after. But the problem is people don't want cars that are less sought after. Everybody kind of wants the same car, which is going to be like a RAV4, a CR-V, right? These are the most popular cars in the country. And those cars turn. They don't sit on the dealership. Or, for instance, like we bought a 4Runner. When we bought it, good luck getting the Ford. And when it first came out, you're going to perhaps pay even an added dealer markup on top of the price of it because it's new and it's hot. So it depends like how hot and new of a car do you want?
I mean, I would argue that, so let's go back to the leasing discussion.
Yeah.
Leasing in general, I know you said you're a fan of it. Unless it's a crazy deal, I would never lease a new car.
That's fair. I'm not.
Because like, let's just do a quick bit of math, right?
Right.
Let's say you're leasing a new Wrangler.
Okay.
Okay. Some of the ones I saw recently are $3,000 or $4,000 down.
Okay.
Okay. And let's say they're $300 a month.
Yeah. Which is probably going to be more than that. 300. Wranglers are probably more like $500-$600 a month.
Yeah. Well.
Especially a Rubicon.
Yeah. But let's do 300 times 24. That's 7,200.
Yeah.
Plus $3,000 down. You're at 10,200 for that 2 years. Plus, let's say the thing's going to be $250 a month to insure. times 24.
But that's going to be insured. You're going to that cost is set. So, it's fixed. You're not going to change that whether you buy or lease.
But my point is that so you've just invested about $16,000 into that car.
Over the 2 years.
Over 2 years.
Yeah.
And what do you have to show for it at the end of the 2 years? You likely have another fee, which I'm learning about leasing, where you have to pay to return the car and also buy new tires for it.
Yeah, you have to return right? the tires.
Whereas if you had that $12,000 and you had just bought a 2004 Wrangler, right? That car will still be worth $10,000. Okay,
but if you finance it, especially on a long-term
loan, way worse.
You're going to pay a lot more.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? And you're 100%. And you're still going to have a lot of those fixed costs, and you won't have the peace of mind of having a warranty on it, which you will have for every 3 years. It's a typical 3-year, 36,000-mile lease. You will always have a warranty on it, so you never have to worry about actually the car not having put any additional money into it. If it breaks, they have to fix it. And you'll also have the fun of having a different car every 3 years, which for a lot of people is cool.
It's cool, but it's expensive.
Yeah, it's always expensive. Cars are expensive.
Yeah, but you can make it like this is the – I was just having this conversation. I think our perspective is skewed as car people.
I agree.
Like so when Morgan needed a car, my wife, in college, she could have gone out and leased a car. She had about a – she had a budget. She wanted to spend under $10,000, right? Uh-huh. What she did instead is she's – put $4,000 down and then got a $5,000 loan and then bought a $9,000 used CRV, right? And it was a pretty old CRV. It was like a 2007. This was probably 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And then she drove that car for 50 or 80,000 miles and she paid off that loan quickly. She had a $4,000 loan. She paid it off. And then she had a car that she was paying $95 a month to insure and she had no reliability issues with it. I mean, we're talking 100,000 miles on a CRV. She drove it 50 or 80,000 miles. Nothing broke.
Well, there's 2 points here. First, we use Grainger as this advent of extended warranties has really been helpful. So one of our sponsors, full disclosure, is Grainger, and they provide extended warranties. So once the manufacturer warranty is up after 3 or 5 years, depending on the vehicle, then they step in. And we actually used it on our Corvette.
And
it worked great.
Yeah, it was great.
We had one of those little butterfly valves that changes the exhaust note go out. That was a $1,500 repair. It was under warranty. Wonderful. Right. And the problem is you can't get an extended warranty for that Cadillac that's sitting in our garage, right? If it's a 20.
It's probably too old.
Yeah. I don't know how far back they go, but they don't go back more than maybe 10 years. I don't know if they even go back 10 years.
And the argument.
Or like 50,000 miles.
I mean, the argument about buying a new car, I think you're right that you've definitely, I'm not saying you're wrong. People do want that peace of mind of having that warranty, right? Grainger's an option for an extended warranties. Let's talk about something that you've always talked about, which is the safety aspect, right? You're better off buying a new car because it's going to be a much safer vehicle than an older car.
Well, no, there's more to it than that.
And like a night in the ECU because your ICU, because your car doesn't have passenger side airbags is going to be $20,000, which is cheaper than a car. Now, I think that's a very valid argument if this was 2008. And you were looking at a 1992 Honda Accord, right, instead of a 2008 Honda Accord. The problem is a 15-year-old car from today is a 2010 car, right? Or even a 10-year-old. A 2010 or 2015 car is going to have driver, passenger airbags. It's going to have side curtain airbags. It's going to have real crumple zones. It's going to have ABS, traction control, stability control. It will likely have a backup camera if it's 15 and newer. It'll likely have automatic emergency braking if it's 15 or newer. Right, like these are things.
No, it won't have emergency braking. That came out in the last 5 years. Became standard. I mean,
we had an F-150 that had emergency braking, right?
Yes, we did. I remember. I don't know if it was 2015. I remember the first car that had it. It was really poor because I was going down past our house and the car was making a left turn and he slowed down enough that the thing actually slammed down the emergency brakes, thinking that I was going to hit him.
Yeah.
Even though I wasn't, I was clearly not going to hit him. And so my point there is the technology keeps getting better year after year. Yeah. But, so you're getting safer cars if you're going back 10, 15 years. But if you want the latest and greatest in safety, you're going to have to go new.
But my argument is like the safety progression from the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s.
Yes, it
was immense. Like it was that hockey puck curve, right? It was immensely great. You had seatbelts went from shoulder belts to 3-point. You had crumple zones. You had airbags come in. You had pre tensioners come and all this stuff, right? But if you go back to 2010, I'm not sure the cars have gotten that dramatically. They've gotten more annoying.
Well, I know.
Right?
I know.
Like lane keep. That you could argue that's safety. I'd argue it's annoying.
I know that every time I go to a launch of a new car, the manufacturer, until recently, used to tout how much stronger the steel is. And these are safety things, right? These are things that new cars have. So in other words, the cage that's around you is much stronger than the previous generation.
Sure.
So I think, yeah, you're right. You can get, you know, let's say 70% of the safety in a 10-year-old car of a new car, but that 30% differential in the ER could easily be $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 if you survive.
Yeah, it might be. I don't know that data that well. I mean, I know like recently, like small overlap crash testing has improved a lot, right? That's within the last 15 years. That's really become a conversation. And I've no doubt that cars are getting safer. My argument is like, I'm not sure that a 2010 or 2015 car is going to warrant that being that much safer to spend $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 more than to buy a version that's 10 years old.
Of people just want that new car smell, and you're forgetting that a lot of people not only want the peace of mind of having a new car from a safety point of view, from a reliability point of view, but also from the fact that they're the first ones that get to fart in it, right? A lot of people don't want somebody else's used car, and I have no problems with used cars. I think they're great. I think they're bargains, but a lot of people like the new thing.
Sure, which is fine.
And if you want the new thing, you have to go through a dealership.
Yeah.
Or get a Tesla. Or a Rivian.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm jaded to the whole thing. And partly it's because I've had so many friends that try to go out and buy new cars in the last few years. And they've always had such terrible experiences. I'm just very frustrated at the whole process, right? I'm not frustrated at one dealer in particular. I'm just frustrated that like it's still – there are good dealers and there are dealers that are ruining it for everybody else.
So let's talk about the other side of that coin. Every time we do a truck review and the truck is like whatever it is, which is $70,000, $80,000 now, the first comment on there will be like this is crazy. I just want
– That's me. That's me thinking that.
I just want a basic truck for $35,000. And then I think to myself, well, how are these manufacturers selling like 14 versions of their top-end truck, which is what you have now, if everybody just wants an honest truck, you know, a work truck? And the fact is that, and you had this experience with your Wrangler, that while people say they just want the base work truck, or in case the basic car, for some reason, when they get to the dealership, it always ends up being the top end or often the middle spec. Tell them what happened with your Jeep and how hard it was to sell that base Jeep.
I actually sold it really quickly.
No, the dealer, the second one.
Oh yeah. When we ordered it, they had there was a mess up in the logistics, and they sent two base model Wranglers instead of just mine when I ordered
and
it.
And when we're talking base, we're talking roll up windows.
Yeah,
we're
this
talking
was 2010.
Manual locks. We're talking very base.
2021.
It had air conditioning.
2021 or 22. Yeah, it was when I had the red Wrangler Willys. And the dealer had a really hard time selling the second one, and I was talking to the dealer, and I'm like, well, yeah, because people come in and they just want Rubicons. And we're like, well, do you need that level of capability? Like, do you really need lockers? And they're like, I don't care. I just want Rubicon. So a lot of it, you're right, is people do – they just want the flashy one, right? They just want the High Country badge or the Lariat badge or whatever. But, I mean
– So people like to complain about the cost of new cars, but yet somehow the manufacturers wouldn't be building the upper-level trim if they weren't selling them.
I mean, don't you kind of figure, Dad, especially with 72-month loans, we're going to be sitting in this room in a year or 2 years from now when it all comes crumbling down. I'm going to be like, I remember this moment. It was podcast 311 when people were doing 72-month loans to spend $85,000 for a Lariat F-150.
I don't
think that's going to happen? I really genuinely just don't think it's sustainable.
I don't know where this is going to end up. I think there's we're living in a dangerous time right now for automakers. We talked on the outside, it seems like the automakers are, you know, just trudging along. But when you talk to them, the problem with today is that there's so much change that's happening so rapidly. And then on top of that, the government has made the situation worse by seemingly throwing on arbitrary tariffs based on the shape of the moon, as far as I can tell. And it takes about 10 years to develop a car. And when all of a sudden you go from having this international supply chain of parts, because people, this is also a problem. People think that back in the good old days, I wanted a 50 whatever 3-packer that was built in Detroit. There's no car that's American made today. Actually, the highest percentage of American made car is a Tesla. So if you really want an American made car, get yourself a Tesla.
Right.
After that, it's the Honda Accord and the Camry. yeah. which is kind of ironic when you think about it.
Sure.
Because they're Japanese companies. And that's because there's this incredibly long supply chain of parts that comes from all around the world. And so even if the car or truck is made in America, those parts, and oftentimes they're big parts, they're transmissions, they're motors, they're engines, right, are not made in America. So that stuff gets tariffed. And it's really hard for car companies to plan 10 years out when you don't know how much they can sell their car year next week, let alone 5 weeks from now.
Yeah.
And we've got this very capricious government right now that is just, you know, throwing tariffs left and right, and it's creating all kinds of havoc on an industry that's already in trouble because of electrification and autonomy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think we're on a knife's edge right now when it comes to a lot of car makers and whether those car makers can survive or not. And it's not just American ones. It's also the Japanese one. That's a hell of another podcast. You know, we can talk about companies like Stellantis and Nissan survive. And the question is, I'm not sure. And the problem is, it's a great conversation to have, except those car companies employ a boat ton of people.
Yeah.
And if, you know, if Stellantis goes out of business, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people are going to lose their job. And that means that tens of thousands and hundreds of other thousands of people are going to lose their job because all the suppliers that supply the parts to them are also going to go bankrupt. And this is a very precarious time that we're sitting at because, you know, when you talk to the manufacturers, they're not sure where the industry is heading.
So the other thing I want to talk about, which I think is another interesting dilemma, is I think that there's a big shift toward consumers when you look at like the used space versus the new space that are getting really fed up with the software-defined vehicles.
Oh, I agree. I'm so over software-defined vehicles. I think the sweet spot for cars was like 2015. When there, you know that i8 that we have, mm-hmm. where there is a small screen, Cole, you were there, right? And
yeah,
then there
I
are
agree.
Buttons for everything else like the radio and HVAC and knobs. That is a perfect era. We crossed a bridge that I wish we could cross over because I hate having everything in the screen. I think most people have it. And we're also at a really bad time for autonomy. And what I mean by that, there are five levels of autonomy. And right now we're in that number two, that middle one, where you can use Super Cruise, you can use full self-driving in quotes, you can use Blue Cruise, but the fact is you got to sit there and nanny the car or truck, and it's gonna yell at you when you take your eyes off the road and your hands off the wheel. And what humans are good at is either driving or not driving. So
sure.
we're really good drivers, and we're really good at not paying attention, texting, watching videos. What we're really bad at is having the car drive but having us have to supervise it while it's driving itself.
Yeah.
And until we get to level 3 or level 4 autonomy, it's just gonna suck.
Yeah, but what I wanted to show though is if you head over to Bring a Trailer, this is an interesting thing I've been noticing. It's been going for a while now, but I think this is a good demonstration of just how insane the interest in like these slightly used cars. Look up 200 series Land Cruiser.
That's gonna be tricky.
There you go. Nice. Okay, now scroll down a little bit further. You got to see some of the prices. 8,000 mile Land Cruiser. This just finished last week. $87,000. 2020, that's a five-year-old Land Cruiser now, $84,000.
We should have bought that Heritage Edition.
Well, that's what I'm saying. $87,000 for that Heritage, $82,000 for the Heritage, $92,000. Now, fundamentally, if you compare a 2020 Land Cruiser to the new Land Cruiser, the size is about the same. The off-road capability, I'd argue, is better in the new one. Fuel efficiency is better in the new one. Tech is better in the new one. Reliability, that's definitely another conversation. I think there's a lot of people that argue the 5.7 is better, but you know the new one's still got that warranty you're talking about. That thing's out of warranty now. But there's so much interest in kind of the old school mechanical feel, especially within the Toyota world, that these Land Cruisers are in some cases going for more than when they were new. Like that 8,000 mile one, scroll down, call that white one. That guy, it's a 2021. He probably bought that thing for 85. He drove it 8,000 miles, had it for 4 years, and then sold it for 87.1. Like that doesn't happen, right? With the 2020 used car.
So you're right, it doesn't happen. But there's also another factor that's at play, and it started with the exotic cars, supercars, and now it's come down to like these cars, where there are people who are once upon a time, obviously, if you wanted to make money in the car world, you become a dealer or you become a used car dealer. But now everybody is kind of a collector or worse yet, a flipper of cars, right? So there are people that in the past had a job and they would buy a used car and then a new car would become used and somebody else would buy it. It was just a natural progression. But now there's a whole, especially with Bring a Trailer, where there's all these people who are making a living basically trying to figure out what the cost of a new car is, what car is going to become hot, and who will want it. And they're buying it not because they want to buy it for transportation. They're buying it as an investment, as a business investment. Like I said, that started with, obviously, the supercars, and now it's come down to, like, even Land Cruisers. And I think when you have all these middlemen, you're just going to see higher prices, and which sure. is what's happening. There's a lot of middlemen now trying to make money on cars. And it's if you love cars like me and you, it just becomes a really sad moment in time, because people are no longer buying cars because they want to drive them, because this is their dream car, because this is their passion. They're buying them because this is just a business for them, and it's just another commodity that they can either, you know, sit on and use it as a hedge against inflation, or flip it eventually and make money on it. And that's been happening now, especially since we've been doing this for the last 10 years. And the most obvious ones that come to mind immediately are cars like the Ford GT. Remember the last Ford GT, mm-hmm. where now these manufacturers are building these kind of low volume cars. You're seeing it, I think, with the new Mustang GDT.
GDD,
yeah. I think you are seeing it with the GT3 products from Porsche, where they're no longer like cars. They're now commodities that you can make money on, and that is just really skewing the market and is driving all kinds of new car prices and used cars prices up through the wall.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some of that, but I think like with Land Cruisers, like, there's just an interest and hype around the older ones, right?
Yeah, I didn't love our 200. I don't get it.
No, if you're spending $87,000 for a 200 series, there's faster ways to put yourself to sleep. I mean, sleeping pills are a lot cheaper than $87,000.
It was a very good car, but oh my gosh, was it boring.
Yeah, it's very, very dull to actually live with and drive.
Yeah, I mean, this is the problem with Lexus. If you're a car enthusiast, the more perfect something is, the more boring it becomes.
Yeah.
Sometimes the least perfect ones are the
more... But it'll get you home. That's a pretty big selling point.
Yeah, it will get you home, but most cars will get you home nowadays, Tommy.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, car. Is there such a thing as, that's a good question to ask, is there such a thing as a bad car in 2025?
Not really.
Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe there's cars that are boring. There's cars that probably have known issues. You can talk about transmissions. You can talk about, you know, cylinder deactivation, especially in trucks. But there's no car that I would say don't buy it, because like in the 70s, there were definitely cars that were lemons right from the factory. I don't think those exist anymore.
Well, like you can't buy a Chevette anymore. So I don't think things are that bad. But no, I mean, for the most part, like especially the mainstream stuff, we got a lot of emails like, should I buy a CRV or a RAV4 or Rogue? And it really doesn't matter. I mean, buy whichever one you can afford, whichever one is at the better dealership, and whichever one is the best color. Because, like, for the most part, they benchmark each other so closely that the difference between a RAV4 hybrid and a CRV hybrid is so minuscule in the real world.
All right, so let's spend the last 15 minutes giving them some real consumer advice, because we've just been whinging and moaning about a lot of stuff. But let me give you some real consumer advice. So if you want a good used car, I would say go electric, and go electric fast, because electric cars are depreciating, and yet in terms of reliability and in terms of maintenance, they are the most reliable, the most maintenance-free cars you can get. Now, to me, I don't care what powers the car, whether it's electric or an internal combustion engine. If you're one of those guys or gals out there who's like, you're going to take the Hemi out of my cold dead hands, well, I'm sorry, but if you want a bargain, if you want a great car, get yourself an electric car right now, because this is the time to buy used electric. And don't look at the reports from 10 years ago or from 5 years ago, or from 2 years ago. Things are changing very rapidly. You can easily cross-country an electric car now. We've done it a whole bunch, and it's getting easier. There's tens of thousands of chargers coming online every year.
I still wouldn't want the cross-country electric car.
Okay, that's fine, but I'm saying it's very doable. And you know, let's give them some examples of incredibly great electric cars that are dirt cheap. I think the two most obvious ones are the Lucid. I remember we had the Lucid Grand Touring, the GT Air. And I fell in love with that car. It was a $138,000 car. I found one for sale in Denver that was less than 6 months old with 4,000 miles for $63,000. It had lost over half of its value in less than half a year. Another one are the Mercedes EQ cars, EQC, EQS. Those things are really great cars. They're dirt cheap as a used car, and they're super reliable.
The Lucid is like the one used electric car I would never recommend.
They have issues with, I know.
Yeah, I mean, the EQ products are very well baked, right?
Yeah.
EQS, EQE, EQS SUV. Yeah, you can get a $100,000 car for like $35,000, and they're going to be so well made. I don't think I'd buy a used Lucid. I don't trust that software package.
I mean, the used car I wouldn't buy, and we have bought it, is a Leaf, because the batteries weren't climate controlled.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think second-gen Leafs are a little better. So I wouldn't get an early Leaf, especially one from a hot hot climate area that's been charged fast a lot, but like the second gen Leafs are seem a little bit better. I would get any pretty much any of the BMW products, i4s, used i4s, incredible cars.
You know what's
i3s, really, you know what's really
incredible? Get a used Bolt. It's coming
back.
Yeah,
Bolts are really, 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 really
Bolt,
good.
You can pick up a Bolt for $10,000 all day long. The downside, of course, with electric cars is you're buying old technology. It's like buying an old phone. But a lot of people have figured out that old phones work just as well as new phones. And the truth is, if you're going back, let's say, 5-10 years with electric, I wouldn't go back any further than that. If it's a Tesla, you're okay. Then just make sure that, you know, used cars are, like I said, all about batteries. And the Leaf battery had huge issues because they didn't climate control them. But they're not like phones. If you have a used electric car and it's 5-10 years old, just like we proved the Tesla, you still have like 90% of the battery. And it's taken a long time for that to like seep through into the zeitgeist because people keep thinking that an electric car after 3 years is throwaway. It's not.
I mean, you want a really good car, you go out and buy a 2008 RAV4 V6. 2007 RAV4 V6. That's producer Cole's car and Mary's car. I mean, I think anything 2000s through 2010s Honda, Toyota, it's going to be a really good car.
But you're going to pay, you can buy a 3-year-old Leaf for what it's going to cost you to buy that RAV4 that Cole was talking about.
Yeah, but his can go anywhere in the country.
You can go anywhere in the country.
You are not going anywhere in the country in a Leaf, Dad.
No, I'm sorry, not a Leaf. I'm Bolt. You could buy a used Bolt for the same amount that he paid for his, you know, much older, and you can go anywhere in the country in the Bolt.
But uncomfortably.
No, it'll be comfortable. You'll just have to, it only charges 50 kilowatts.
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
So you can sit there a while to charge it.
I mean, here's the thing with EVs.
They have like 4 moving parts.
Yeah,
I agree. There's nothing to fix.
But I wouldn't own one as my only car. I still to this day would.
You're such an old man.
No, I wouldn't.
Oh, you are such a grumpy old man.
Like, I love Bolt. I would love to have a Bolt as a second car, yeah. Just like our Fiat. But like, if you realistically want to take a road trip, it's so nice having a gas car. It really, really is. Especially if you live in an apartment complex, an EV is just not really an option. I think an EV is an excellent second car, and I would recommend it to anybody.
I listen to this show called the Car Pro on the weekends. It's an old dude who gives advice to old people, and this is exactly the advice that you're giving. It's a great second car. I think it's a great first car. If you want to get like a really great first car, get like a 3-year-old Ioniq 5. You're gonna love life. You're never gonna have to pay for
gas.
But
what if you don't have charging? Then you want to really rely on EA.
I mean, every house has electricity.
Does your house have electricity? Could you charge in a garage?
Well, he's in an apartment.
That's
said
what
house.
I'm saying.
I didn't say apartment. I said house.
What if you're renting?
Okay, if you're in a house, then you got to go out and spend like between $500 and $1,000 bucks additionally to get a level 2 charger.
So
because that's now, if you're in an apartment complex, yes, it's a little bit more difficult. You're probably going to have to go to the EA,
which is a pain in the butt.
It's also a pain in the butt to have to take your car in for service, which you won't have to do.
Yeah, but
and it's also a pain in the butt to have to pay for new brakes. And it's also a pain in the butt, you know, to have to pay for think of the myriad of things that goes wrong in internal, for a new starter, for a new clutch, for a new transmission. None of that's going
to
happen with
Cole,
electric
have you
car.
Had to do a new starter, a new engine, or a transmission in your car?
I think alternator is the only thing.
Alternator, one thing. But it's that.
It's coming, Cole. It's coming.
If you don't have regular
at some point.
If you don't have regular places to charge, it's not worth that. And especially if you don't own your house, like I want you to go tell Mary to go spend $1,000 to upgrade her rental house.
Then you gotta go tell the landlord to spend that.
And he's gonna say no, because I know her landlord.
And look, she has that Leaf and she plugs it in overnight and it's fine. She uses regular current. Or if you really want a level 2 and don't want to get a charger, just get a long cable like Andre has and stick it in the dryer.
Yeah.
You know.
But she still says it wouldn't be her only car. She loves that Leaf, but it wouldn't be her only car.
Well, that's fine. A lot of people have that. As a basis, I get it. I just think nowadays you can live with an electric car just as you can live with an internal. And you're going to pay a quarter of the price because everybody in America thinks that, you know, they're thinking like from 10 or 15 years ago that electric cars are not tenable as everyday cars, which is the argument you're making. I disagree. And I think you can save a boat ton of money by getting a used electric car.
Well, folks, let us know what you think about
are we
this.
Done? How long have we been going?
Cole's got to go.
Oh, yeah, we've gone over this. Oh, gosh. Yep. I've been
Cole's
got to
go do another shoot. So let us know what you think about this podcast.
Yeah. Has it been too much of us just whining and whinging?
That's what we do.
That's what we do
and
here.
And drop us a comment below. Thank you to all the Patreon members for watching live, and we'll see you next time.
Ciao.